Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Wednesday, May 2nd. Hard to believe, folks. Kind of feels like tomorrow is Christmas. Maybe not. I'll ask the Canadian first. He's used to cold weather. Does it feel like Christmas is coming?
No.
Fred Jackson I'm talking to.
No. In fact, I was just talking to J.J. Jasper coming to the studio, and he said, this must feel like a summer day in Canada, and it does. Our home base here in Tupelo today, we've got, I think it's going up to 85 or 90.
85 or 90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've had some great weather here. I hope we can kind of string out the spring weather we've had, because it's been fantastic. Walker Wildman is also here in studio with us. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here today.
Renovation Walker.
Yes.
That's my new name.
Demo.
That's my new name.
Demolition Man.
Yeah. Brave soul.
So you've bought a new house. Well, it's actually been in the family.
That's right.
For 45 years. You wanted to keep it, but it's going to undergo some major renovations, and you started it with a sledgehammer, didn't
That's right. Started with the sledgehammer, took up, the worst thing is taking up glued down hardwood floor.
Oh.
I mean, this heavy duty adhesive, I mean, it's an awful job, and I did it to save money, and I have all new windows and a new front door going in today, so it's
You're not
coming
doing
along.
That? You're not doing that? Putting the windows in?
Nope. I don't do anything that takes skill. Our precision.
And those things, windows and doors, you want to make sure those things are in right, because you can get rain in and all kinds of stuff.
Can I make a prediction?
Yes.
He will never do this again.
Probably not.
I have talked to so many people who have gone through this.
Yeah.
Don't do it or never do it again.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to have any money after this, so I won't have any money to do it.
All right, folks, before we get to the news of the day, I do want to remind you, ask you to remember, in other words, that tomorrow, May 3rd, is the National Day of Prayer. And so the American Family Association encourages you to meet with other Christians at your city hall, for example. That's what we will be doing tomorrow from 12:20 to 12:40 local time tomorrow, to pray for our nation and our leaders. And you can learn more about that. Maybe this is the first time you've heard of it, or maybe you've participated in the past and it's kind of snuck up on you. You can learn more and see if there is a local event planned for your area. And how do you find out that information? You can go to nationaldayofprayer.org, nationaldayofprayer.org. So we encourage you to join with Christians across the country in corporate prayer tomorrow, May 3rd, the National Day of Prayer. All right, Fred, let's go to the news board and see what's cooking.
Well, before we get to our political stories of the day, we were talking about weather a moment ago. This is tornado season, and we talk about Tornado Alley. We got a lot of folks that listen to us in Oklahoma and up through Kansas. You may not have heard this. There were a number of tornado sightings yesterday.
Really?
Now, fortunately, if I can say it this way, they were in the fields, in the field area. But there is, we're just talking about a heating up here in the south. That always brings these tornadoes. And there's a lot of concern in certain areas. I was looking at some of the maps this morning in deep red in that Tornado Alley area up around the Kansas City area. So there are some watches out today. So along with praying for our nation, pray for those dear folks that live in those areas, because unfortunately we have to do stories every spring along this line.
Right.
And, we've done stories about whole towns just wiped out.
Yes.
And, so this is when a lot of people in this country celebrate spring, folks who live in that Tornado Alley, this is a very nervous time for them.
Yeah, a little bit of white knuckle time.
It is. So be praying for those dear folks who live in those areas. Tornadoes are not predictable.
Right.
They really aren't. And they can turn on a dime sometimes.
Right.
So just be praying for those folks who live in that, especially in that area of the country.
All right. That's right. It's you forget. And we get tornadoes in this part of the country too,
mm-hmm.
but that is what they call Tornado Alley, and yeah. it's every year
mm-hmm.
they have to endure that. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm not a meteorologist or, you know, a weather person, but you know, to your point, as the ground begins to heat up in the spring,
mm-hmm.
That causes, you know, hot air to rise. There's some explanation for all that. So
mm-hmm.
This is the time of the year for that. All right, good. Thank you for that.
All right. Well, let's go back to Washington. And we talked yesterday on the program about this list of questions that the New York Times published, allegedly put together by special counsel Robert Mueller's team, the kinds of questions that they would like to ask President Trump if he was to appear before them. And we heard the reaction from the president yesterday that, number one, how is it that the New York Times got this list of questions from the special counsel Robert Mueller's team? And he went to the point that this proves again all the leaks that are happening out there. He called it again a witch hunt that's against him. Well, this morning on Fox and Friends, there was a defense attorney, Victoria Tensing, and she's fairly high profile, and she was asked for her reaction to the types of questions that are apparently being put forward there, proposed questions to the president, and this is how she responded to that question. Cut to.
These blew my mind. It's, what did you feel?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when, you know, bless me, Father, I have sinned. I had impure thoughts. I thought the Catholic right. confessional was the only place that our thoughts were called into question, not in the legal system of the United States.
And so if you were one of his attorneys, and I know you and Joe, I think, got close to it, but you had other clients that would keep that from happening. If you were advising him right now, you'd say, Mr. President, sitting in a chair opposite Robert Mueller is the last place you need to be.
I would say, as I have said to other clients, if you want to go down there, I'm going to go stand in the door, and you are going to have to go over my dead body to go down there.
So there is an expert defense attorney, her advice to President Trump not to show up. Now, the headline this morning is special counsel team has floated the idea of a subpoena for President Trump. In other words, they take an invitation off the table and make it a subpoena. So that's going to be a question. We're going to have our own Abe Hamilton III on coming up in a few minutes. That's a question we're going to ask him. I mean, where does this go? A president of the United States, first of all, do they have that power to subpoena
right.
the president? Mm-hmm. Secondly, maybe we want to ask, what does the president do if he gets a subpoena?
Right.
How do you respond to that? What might be his, what would be the tactic of his lawyers?
Right. Do you take the Fifth Amendment? And here's the thing.
Mm.
Some people will say, oh, well, so then you assume that the president is guilty and has something to hide. No, the thing that I want to make clear when we talk to Abe, and he'll be coming on at 10:30, is that Robert Mueller is a prosecutor. Prosecutors can be very tricky in the way they pose questions. And so you want to make sure that you're not tricked into saying something that they can then use to not only say fabricate, mm-hmm. but, you know, they do base prosecutions on things you say, mm-hmm. which is why you're yeah. Mirandized and you're anything you say can and will be used against you.
Right. Yeah. The Robert Mueller and any prosecutor, they don't need to interview President Trump to find out if there was, quote, collusion, of which is not a crime, between President Trump, then-candidate Trump, and Russian government officials. If that collusion is there, which I don't know, collusion's nowhere in the federal law as far as being a crime, so they won't charge him on collusion. It'll be something else, coordinating with the foreign government, blah, blah, blah. But they don't need the president to figure that out. Either he did or he didn't. All that is found out before they interview the suspect, so to speak, President Trump. Just like with the Hillary Clinton email investigation, we all knew what law she broke from the onset.
Mm-hmm.
Now it was just a matter of who else was involved and to what extent. Let's get all the evidence put together. So when they interviewed Hillary Clinton over the email server, they had their conclusion made up going into that interview. So I don't even think President Trump needs to sit down with Mueller. There's nothing good that can come from it, only bad that can come from it. And Mueller doesn't need Trump to finish his investigation.
Well, and here's one other thing to throw into this mix, into this discussion. Also, off Drudge, there's an article of regarding former Trump campaign advisor Michael Caputo, who just lost his home. He had to spend $125,000 on lawyers to comply with the demands of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's lost his home. He was very upset. He says that he lived in Russia for 2 decades, but insists he knows nothing about any links between Trump's campaign and the Kremlin. But these legal demands from the Senate Intelligence Committee had to be fulfilled, and you have to use lawyers to do this. So he's lost his home. And he said, I want to know, this is what he told Democrats, I want to know who cost us so much money, who crushed our kids, who forced us out of our home, all because you lost an election. Mm. And to me, that is the most important point here, is why this is being done. And the Democrats, now, this kind of thing, I'm not naive, this kind of thing is done when a political party smells blood in the water on a political opponent, like with Hillary Clinton. They go after it. I understand. But these are the kinds of people who get crushed in the process. And Michael Caputo says, well, look, we lost our home because of it.
Yeah. And the difference here is, like, let's just say, for example, the Benghazi investigation. All right. So we knew there from the onset that Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, was warned dozens of times of the security threat that the ambassador and his security team faced. They applied dozens of times for more Marines, more guards in Benghazi, and all of that was turned down. So that is what the investigation is based on. Did the Secretary of State and her subordinates intentionally ignore the security threats that the people in Benghazi faced, despite the facts? But with President Trump and this Russia thing, there's not that initial bombshell to then investigate. You know, it's one thing if you have had Putin and candidate Trump meeting in a back room in a secret meeting on the tarmac that nobody was supposed to know about, and then some local reporter finds it out. There's nothing there. There's no smoke.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, broader picture here. When Barack Obama became president of the United States, I believe there was a very deliberate attempt to weaponize the powers that he had, i.e. the Justice Department, the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, a little history, you know, going back not that many years, the way that the IRS was weaponized to go after Tea Party people.
Yeah, before we go any further, let's just explain what we mean by weaponize. We mean that the federal government, it's the system, the bureaucracy, has a stated legal purpose. So the IRS has the legal purpose, oversimplifying, but to collect the taxes that are due from, you know, legitimate taxes from law-abiding citizens. Mm. Weaponizing the IRS. When we talk about weaponizing the federal government, we're saying instead of doing that, they're going to do that plus they are going to punish our political opponents.
Yeah,
that's what we mean when we say weaponize. So,
and that's, you know, and that was troubling. And of course, we know now who was the lady that headed the IRS.
Lois Lerner. Yes.
Remember when she took the fifth? Where was the media on that?
Right.
Well, obviously, you're taking the fifth because the accusations being made against you
are probably true. She totally forfeited her Fifth Amendment when she gave an opening statement.
Right.
Yes.
And then she said, I plead the fifth. You can't do that. Either you plead the fifth or you don't.
Yeah. You either say nothing.
Right.
Or you open yourself up to
conversation.
And then there was the education department. The education department then started threatening school districts across the country on so many different fronts. We're going to remove your education, your millions of dollars in education money for school districts across the country if you don't serve kids the right food.
Right.
And we found out that kids, they put the food on the trays and they dumped them in garbage cans.
Right.
By the way, that's still happening. I talked to somebody in the last week. It's still happening. Millions of dollars worth of food being wasted because the kids say, I don't want to eat that. The school districts still have to put it on the tray under threat of losing federal funding.
Because that policy has not been overturned.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. On and on.
Also, you had to cater to transgender students' bathroom demands,
yeah,
or you could lose your money.
And the Obama administration didn't like the rate of discipline for African-American students. So their solution wasn't to look at, okay, why were they being disciplined? It was, we don't like the numbers.
Right.
So you better take the numbers down. Not to say that, look at the behavior and make sure it's fair. And we want the numbers to be collapsed, or we're going to remove federal funding.
And that was at least brought up with the school shooter.
Yes.
Who they said had, at least some of the reports were, that he had had numerous run-ins with school officials.
Yeah.
But threats were made, but they couldn't investigate because it would skew the numbers in terms
in
of...
In Parkland, Florida, the police department, it's a known policy that nobody talks about is if it's just something like robbing a store or something, they don't even press charges because, like you're saying, if it turns out they're incentivized for less crime, these police departments, they're incentivized with federal funds to lower the crime rate.
Right.
But it's not an honest lowering of the crime rate. It's the lack of prosecuting crimes.
We're gonna turn a blind eye to crimes, and thus fewer crimes go on the sheet.
Right.
It's amazing. So
ridiculous.
Sit in President Trump's chair. He's got all this history. He's looked at that for the last 8 years. And now you have ongoing Robert Mueller's special counsel, Robert Mueller. Is there any wonder he's suspicious? Because the people still in the FBI power, still in the Justice Department, I'm talking about Rod Rubenstein, he's still there. He's basically Robert Mueller's boss.
Right.
Because Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself from all of this.
He recused himself from the Russia investigation.
From the Russia investigation. So, is it any wonder why President Trump refers to it as a witch hunt?
Right.
They've been in there. You know, Robert Mueller's special counsel, Robert Mueller, has been at this for what, over a year now? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing. So people say, well, charges have been laid against Manafort. Well, it has nothing to do with Russian collusion.
Right.
The charges that have been against him. And we talked about Mr. Flint yesterday.
Yeah, I think that what a lot of people, and had conversations with Abe Hamilton about this too. Mm-hmm. We'll let him at 10:30 talk about this if he wants to. But going after people like Manafort and others, this is a tactic for district attorneys or other prosecutors when they're going after criminals, big time criminals. They try to find something in the life of a lower echelon criminal. And then you put the squeeze on that person, say, we will prosecute for this, send you to prison, unless you tell us what you know about the drug king, the boss of the higher up of the gang, and they go up the ladder that way. Mm-hmm. And so some people are saying they have kind of tricked people like, Manafort or others in order to get them to turn on President Trump. Well, what if they don't know anything?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then what happens? These people's lives are ruined because the Mueller investigative team is using them to try to get to the president?
Yeah, and typically the prosecutors or the investigators push for that perjury trap and try to pressure someone when they know beyond the shadow of a doubt that there's a crime there, but they just need a confession.
Right.
You know, but they're pushing for something that 99% chance is not even there. So you're pushing something, maybe going to charge Flynn and Manafort. Well, they've already charged him, but they haven't pursued it yet. They keep delaying the Michael Flynn hearing, which is odd because there are reports that Michael Flynn didn't lie to the FBI investigators. So that
or that he
that
was tricked.
Yeah. Oh, that he was tricked.
Or that he was tricked into saying something that the prosecutor, that the investigative team knew he might not know the answer to the question. He thinks he knows it. Then they come back and say, you said... And Flynn's going, well, I thought that was it.
Right.
And so maybe that's why this is being postponed. Mm-hmm. Keep that dangling out there as a threat towards other people they're looking at, including maybe the president.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a serious time in our country when we're looking at a justice system that has been so grossly politicized. And to that point, yesterday, the Attorney General of Texas along with, I think, a total of seven states. They've launched a lawsuit challenging the unlawful, what they call in a press release from the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, the unlawful Obama-era DACA program. All right? Let's be very clear about this. There's no law in place protecting illegal immigrants. DACA was something that was cooked up by former President Barack Obama in a way of saying these are young people who came across the border with their parents who crossed the border illegally, and so giving this protection. But there was a time frame in there. And that time frame has expired.
Well, and let me just point out that DACA, we use the abbreviation. It means yes. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and that's what you're talking about. Deferred. It was put off for a time, and that time has expired.
And it has expired. But then you had a federal judge in Washington recently call the Department of Homeland Security's rationale against the program ending DACA arbitrary and capricious, and he gave the Trump administration 90 days to make a new case. Wait a minute, if it's an executive order, what's that even doing in the courts?
Right.
Executive orders are not the power of the law. It's something the president puts in place over a temporary period.
For the executive branch.
Yes.
That's the key here. This is not a law passed by Congress that applies nationwide. An executive order is something to do with the executive branch, which is under the authority of the president.
Right.
It's like the president saying casual Friday, and then another president saying, well, we're going to do away with casual Fridays, and a judge saying, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can. It's the executive branch. Yeah. I'm in charge.
If it can be enacted, which DACA was enacted, even though it was not legal, and a judge in Texas 3 or 4 years ago ruled it was not legal. But if you can enact it, just like you're saying, the dress code policy, if you can enact it and nobody raises Cain about it, then you can withdraw it. So, but they just don't like that he's withdrawing it.
Here's another aspect. In this lawsuit that's being launched by the Attorney General, Ken Paxton of Texas, along with, and I can read you the other states here just so that you're aware of this. I'll get that for you in just a second. Anyway, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, makes this point. When Barack Obama put DACA in place, he promised the program would not grant any pathway to citizenship. All right? It's deferred.
Right.
No pathway to citizenship, President Barack Obama told the nation. Well, in this lawsuit, Ken Paxton points this out. It has already led to U.S. citizenship for 1,056 aliens and provided a pathway to citizenship for 39,514 aliens. So Barack Obama tells the nation, hey, don't worry. We're just protecting these people for a little while. It's not going to lead to citizenship. Ken Paxton's pointing out that's a lie. It's already done that because of a court system that has been corrupted, putting stuff in place based on an executive order.
Well, and this goes to Walker's point. This is part of a great deal of the trouble we're having in this country, because DACA was not legal because the president essentially passed a law, which
right.
is Congress's job. So I was using Casual Friday as an example of something that falls under the executive branch, but this is a much more serious breach mm-hmm. of our legal system. When the president, then President Obama, creates a law outside the purview of Congress. And so now we have a situation where not even DACA is being followed.
Now, let me name the other states joining Texas: Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Nebraska, South Carolina, and West Virginia. So they're all getting together and saying, DACA is an executive order. It does not have the power of the law, and we're challenging this.
Good. All right. Folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Abraham Hamilton III, we're going to ask him some legal questions because he's our legal eagle. We'll be back in a few minutes.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Ray Comfort of livingwaters.com.
An atheist is foolish because he denies the inner light that God's given to every man. They believe nothing was the actual creative force for everything.
We'll also hear from Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word, and we'll have news and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
The AFA Cultural Institute, a video library of resources dealing with the discussions of our day.
Marriage and family, finances, how we know that the text of the Bible is actually what was originally written. The AFA Cultural Institute takes all of these topics and puts them in the hands of people to be able to equip them.
Start your library of the AFA Cultural Institute, now available for purchase as downloads or DVDs at afastore.net.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. onenewsnow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit onenewsnow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. A group of five Republican lawmakers is defending an Army chaplain facing what could be a career-ending punishment. Chaplain Scott Squires was found guilty of discriminating against a lesbian couple after he declined to conduct a marriage retreat. The chaplain is endorsed by the Southern Baptist Convention, and under their guidelines, he's barred from marriage events that include same-sex couples. Congressman Richard Hudson, a Republican from North Carolina, joined four other lawmakers in writing a letter to the Secretary of the Army.
What's happening here is a real travesty. Chaplain Squires followed Army regulations, followed the federal law. He did everything right, and now he's being punished.
He says federal law protects people like Chaplain Squires from being punished because of his religious beliefs.
You know, I'm going to stand with Chaplain Squires and my colleagues, and we're going to get answers, and we're going to hold people accountable to the law.
I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, and Walker Weilman in studio. It is Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Walker, I'm going to talk about National Day of Prayer for just a moment, but let our listeners know if they want to watch what we're doing here as well as listen, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can. The first option is to visit afr.net, afr.net, our website. You can listen to American Family Radio 24/7 wherever you are, so long as you have an internet connection. The other two ways to listen, or really three ways, is our app, American Family Radio app on your smart device. But Today's Issues is on Facebook and YouTube, so you can watch the show in both of those places. Just type in Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. Also on Facebook, I'm posting links to the news stories that we're discussing here. So many ways to stay connected to the show.
All right, folks, I mentioned last segment that tomorrow, that is Thursday, May 3rd, is the National Day of Prayer, and the American Family Association and American Family Radio both encourage you to meet with other Christians at your city hall from 12:20 to 12:40 local time tomorrow to pray for our nation and our leaders. We'll be doing that. Our entire staff, most of our staff, will be participating in that. And you can learn more and see if there is a local event planned for your area at nationaldayofprayer.org. That's nationaldayofprayer.org. So we encourage you to join with Christians across the country in corporate prayer tomorrow, the National Day of Prayer. All right, well, as promised, we have Abraham Hamilton III on with us here in studio, public policy analyst, general counsel for AFA, host of the Hamilton Corner, heard weekdays at 5.05 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio and Urban Family. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Ed. How are you?
We're doing great. Well, Fred, we wanted to talk to Abe about this Mueller investigation.
Why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
here's the headline from the Associated Press story this morning. Headline is, Special Counsel Team has floated idea of subpoena for Trump. The special counsel leading the Russia investigation raised the prospect in March of issuing a grand jury subpoena for President Donald Trump, his former attorney said, confirming that investigators have floated the extraordinary idea of forcing a sitting president to testify under oath. Now, of course, this story this morning follows yesterday's story where the proposed questions to the president from the Mueller team somehow made its way to the New York Times.
Wonder how that happened.
So first of all, my first question is, would it be extraordinary for a sitting president of the United States to be subpoenaed by a special counsel?
Yes, if he is not the target of any criminal investigation, he is not participating in any particular litigation, is not a product of a particular lawsuit, what would be the legal authority to sue him? It would obviously be under the idea of a grand jury investigation, but I thought, as it has been often represented, that President Trump is not the target of any criminal investigation. So what would they be subpoenaing him for? Is he being subpoenaed as a witness in somebody else's investigation? Obviously, it would turn on what is the purpose of the subpoena, but just to have the conversation about a special counsel compelling a sitting president to testify under oath. I mean, we're living in some strange days, some very strange days.
So would it be possible for, we want to explore this because you're mm-hmm. the person, you have prosecutorial experience mm-hmm. in both New Orleans and Houston. And so, mm-hmm. And you're also a constitutional attorney. So we want to, you're the guy we want to ask these questions to. Mm-hmm. So let's say that Robert Mueller does subpoena the president, okay? And I don't know whether that would be, I guess it would have to be before a grand jury if you're going to subpoena. Can Robert Mueller just simply subpoena him for an interview?
No.
I have a follow-up question. Okay, you can't do that.
No.
So what if the president, what if he subpoenas him and the president says, not going to do it? What happens then?
Well, so a couple things. If there is a lawful subpoena issued, which I highly doubt, and I highly doubt the constitutionality of that as well, but just for the sake of the conversation, his physical presence cannot compel any particular testimony. So there would be nothing, and obviously this would be earth-shattering if this actually happened, but there will be nothing that would prohibit the president from saying, well, I don't know what you want me here for, so I invoke my right against self-incrimination. So you can't compel me to say anything, even if you can arguably lawfully compel me to show up in a particular location, you can't compel me to say anything.
Because the whole idea, I don't think anybody would doubt, and then Walker, let you jump in here too. I'm sure you have questions, but I don't think anybody has any doubt that what Robert Mueller wants to do is destroy the president. Now, he would say, I just want to find out the truth, and if he's done something wrong, we want to bring that to account, okay? I have no doubt that Robert Mueller wants to be the guy who brought down a person who's a very unpopular president mm-hmm. in terms of the left.
Mm-hmm.
I did that, Robert Mueller wants to be able to say. That's my legacy.
Yeah.
I brought down a president. So I don't think that if Trump is subpoenaed, all these things, that there's any doubt that the intent is for him to incriminate himself.
Oh, he's going to
That's what he wants to trick him.
Up.
So
yeah.
Then taking his own constitutional right, the Fifth Amendment protection, mm-hmm. I think would be the smart thing for the president to do. Because the intent here, he's sitting across from Robert Mueller, you want to bring me down. Well,
yeah.
I'm not giving you ammunition for your gun.
And here's the thing, to put this in perspective for everybody else. So not related to the president. Every day in police agencies, offices all over the country, you have people, let's say you have a suspect for murder and you bring them in for an interview. Routinely, the suspect will say, I have nothing to say. And in courts every day, we have judges who will instruct jurors that say if a defendant chooses not to testify at his own trial, that cannot be taken by you as evidence of his guilt. Because in America, we have this Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination. I've had trials where defense attorneys day in, day out will convey to potential jurors. What do you think some of the reasons are for why a suspect wouldn't testify? Well, because testifying under oath is a tricky thing. And if they're guilty, they may not be guilty. This is what the defense attorneys say. But they may not articulate their words the right way. There are numerous reasons as to why not a suspect charged with an actual crime wouldn't take the stand to testify in their own defense. So using that understanding and now exporting the conversation to the issue with President Trump, it would be ridiculously foolish, in my estimation, for the president to sit down and talk to Bob Mueller.
Abe, two things. The I always thought the standard way to do things is that there's an identifiable crime, mm-hmm. a bank robbery, somebody stole somebody's identity, fraud, money fraud, whatever, blah, 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 drug dealing. What here, I just don't know why the president could be subpoenaed for an interview.
For nothing.
I would, don't you think the president should, his lawyers should demand, identify the crime that you think I have committed and the evidence you have, and then I'll testify?
And you could say it in a, you can say that exact same statement in a different way. What is the purpose for your desire to talk to my client?
Right.
Communicate to me specifically what you want to talk about. And you still don't have to agree to talk, but it would be important, in my opinion, if I were in that office to say, what do you want to talk to him about? What is this about? He's been routinely communicated to by Rod Rosenstein, James Comey before him, and others saying that he is not the object nor target of an investigation. So what do you want to talk about?
Another thing is Rod Rosenstein, because Mueller's not the only player here. I just find it very odd that James Comey or Jim Comey is fired, and within 24 hours, Rod Rosenstein, who's very new on the job, swiftly appoints a special counsel, knows who he wants to pick, mm-hmm. the whole team set up, mm-hmm. within a matter of a day.
Yeah.
Now tell me that wasn't pre-planned.
It clearly was, because Comey has already told us that his whole purpose for leaking the memos to his Columbia law professor friend was to trigger the appointment of a special counsel. This trap was set before the bait was laid.
But I don't think Rosenstein first heard of a special counsel when he saw Comey's memos.
No.
I mean, that is so... When you read Comey's memos, there's nothing in there that says, oh, we need a special counsel. It's conversations with the president.
So to say this more specifically, do you think it is beyond the pale to consider the fact that Comey and Rosenstein and others had conversations before? Listen, the evidence has now come to light that James Comey, doing the bidding of James Clapper, the national security director, mm-hmm. doing the bidding of Clapper, approaches President Trump with the dossier information with the express purpose to provide a news hook that would allow the CNN and others to report on the dossier.
Yeah.
The entire purpose for introducing the information to the president was to trigger a news hook to report the issue. Knowing that and knowing Comey's intentional leaking to trigger the appointment of a special counsel, do you think that those occurrences also didn't include the specific special counsel who to be appointed and other things? Of course.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah. I go back to some of the texts between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Mm-hmm. Remember when they began to realize, because they're big fans of Hillary Clinton.
Insurance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They started texting back and forth when it appeared that Donald Trump actually had a chance to win this thing. They actually started talking about a plan B. I think that was the phrase they used in the text. And they were going to talk to Andy about that. Andy McCabe.
Right.
Was the assistant director FBI agent to James Comey. Mm-hmm. This thing reads like a John Grisham book.
It does.
Except America is experiencing this. This is a reality. we ought to be frightened about this kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
One more question, Abe. I've heard the term fruit of the poisonous tree. It's mm-hmm. used in legal in yes. investigations.
Fourth Amendment.
How you get your evidence, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But so let's just say we have the FISA warrant, mm-hmm. FISA application, mm-hmm. which is kind of the first hoorah of the whole Russia investigation. They use the dossier, take it to the court, you know, blah, blah, blah. But if there's factually inaccurate information in that document, the FBI knows it's all uncorroborated. James Comey said it's salacious and unverified, but we used it anyways. If you know all this, how discredited the information is to get the warrant, then does that go into the fruit of the poisonous tree, or because it's a legal warrant, it's usable information?
Yeah, so there's case law that addresses what evidence that's secured as a result of a faulty warrant. So there's some instances where, for example, where you have some information that's factually inaccurate in the application for a search warrant that police officers rely on. They're not the ones who drafted the application, but police officers rely on the search warrant to procure this evidence. Like, for example, there's a drug dealer somewhere to get a search warrant to search his house that they're going to look for marijuana and they end up finding heroin. Mm-hmm. Okay. The fact that they were looking for marijuana, but they found heroin doesn't mean they can't use the heroin at trial.
Okay.
But the thing in this particular instance, when you have some things that are illegally relied upon, and this is why I said that the raid on and Cohen's offices was a clear signal to me that the object of this charade is not for criminal prosecution. It is to lay the foundation to utilize information for a political prosecution, i.e. impeachment, because there are things that they are attempting to use that they know that it won't be admissible in a court of law, but nothing prohibits it from being used, let's say, in a report to Congress.
I hadn't thought about that.
Congress uses for the purposes of establishing high crimes and misdemeanors.
Sorry, Fred, I keep going on and on. Is this why they keep delaying the Michael Flynn hearing, because they don't
Absolutely.
Have standing?
Well, and part of the reason why I believe they're delaying the Michael Flynn hearing is because there's some illegalities going on with his particular case and his particular judge. That's part of it. Secondarily,
the one who signed the FISA warrant?
Yes, yes. And secondly, there are issues because they want to prosecute Michael Flynn for things that, if they're going to be equal, they're going to have to prosecute Andy McCabe and others for, which they don't really want to do. So they're delaying it to give them a do-over in the Michael Flynn case, and it also continues to lengthen the time to allow them to lay their case for impeachment. Mm-hmm. In my estimation, the object here is not criminal prosecution. It's political persecution. Mm-hmm.
Before you came in, Ed, we were talking about the history that started, I guess, with President Barack Obama of weaponizing a judicial system. Mm-hmm. In other words, using your justice system to accomplish your political aims and destroy your political enemies. Mm-hmm. Quick question for you. A presidential executive order, correct me if I'm wrong, does not have the power of law.
No, it does not. It does not.
Well,
You're talking about DACA.
Yes.
Back to DACA. Okay.
I'm going back to DACA with this, but it's all connected
right.
to the weaponizing of a judicial system. President Obama ordered the DACA program, Deferred Action
For Childhood Arrivals.
It has expired. Mm-hmm. All right. Yesterday, Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxton joined with six other states to say that against a judge's recent ruling, which said a federal judge in Washington called the Department of Homeland Security's rationale against the program arbitrary and capricious. Mm-hmm. He gave the Trump administration 90 days to make a new case. So what is a federal judge saying to the Trump administration? He's almost talking like DACA has the rule of law, the mm-hmm. executive order of the president, and therefore I don't like the fact that you've ended it, President Trump. This is what this judge is saying. And so you got to come back with better reasoning. Correct me if I'm wrong. Does the president, the current president of the United States, have the legal constitutional right to say DACA is no more?
Yes. And he has the right to say it for several reasons. He could have written a contravening executive order canceling it, or he could have just simply said it has expired along the terms that former President Obama signed the initial executive order to begin with. There's nothing arbitrary and capricious about allowing a program to expire without reauthorizing it that was in my opinion, illegally, but we'll say for the sake of the conversation, that was initiated by executive fiat. There is nothing that compels President Trump to extend the application or to reauthorize an executive order issued by his predecessor. Can you imagine a program signed into executive order by President George W. Bush that the court system will say, no, you can't stop President Bush's executive action now, President Barack Obama? No.
Well, so then where are we headed in a country where judges are taking extraordinary power unto themselves? I mean, we're not just talking anymore, I don't think, of activist judges who are interpreting certain laws a certain way. We are now at the point where judges are just inventing things. They're inventing things out of thin air.
And inventing their authority. I mean, just to try to make this as simple as possible, when you consider the prospect of a district court judge in one state issuing a national injunction that usurps the executive authority, for example, on immigration and applies it nationwide, it completely belies the establishment of a district court. The very center component of the word is you are a judge over a district, not the nation.
And it creates chaos because you got 10 judges ruling 10 different ways. Which one do you follow? The most recent one yesterday or the one 10 years ago?
Which is why that the founders created the authority in Congress to create these Article III courts over local districts. Mm-hmm. The district does not govern the nation. And unless Congress steps in and Article III of the Constitution says that all courts aside from the Supreme Court, every federal court in the country serves at the pleasure of Congress. That means Congress can close the courts. Congress can add courts. Congress can reshuffle judges. Congress has the authority to rein these judges in.
Except that you have, because these judges are acting in a political manner, just like this prosecution, this investigation is a political investigation and meant to bring down the president, you have Democrats in Congress who are thrilled with the politicization of the judiciary.
They love it.
So they are not going to rein them in. I would have a whole lot more respect for the Supreme Court if they would, in one of these rulings, not only slap down one of these federal district judges, but establish you do not have the authority to create an injunction for the entire country. Mm-hmm. Why do we not see this in a ruling when if something is slapped down?
That's a great question.
I would think the Supreme Court would be protective of its authority to rule over the entire nation by telling a federal district judge, you do not have this authority. That would be a warning shot for all these other district judges. And then since it would be a Supreme Court ruling, other states, other districts would be free to ignore that federal district judge.
Yeah, I think it's something that we actually, as a country, we need the Supreme Court justices to do, to use one of these opinions that are coming out from this latest term and to reorient the nation into the division of authority, the checks and balances system that we have in the country that will remind the judges and the citizens of our nation that federal district court judges are just that, judges over districts, not the entire nation.
Hmm. Wow. Are you guys got anything else for Abe?
No, this is serious business.
It is.
Mm-hmm. This is this is our Constitution being eroded.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and this is quite frankly part of the reasons, as the founders promulgated, that the Constitution was written at a level of grammar and verbiage that was supposedly utilized by moms around their kitchen tables with their children. Mm-hmm. It was basic conversant language that everyone understood. And part of the reason why our system, we see it collapsing around us, is because the political elected candidates are able to rely on, and I don't mean this in an insulting manner, but the ignorance of the American people concerning constitutional issues.
Yeah.
In order to truly hold our leadership accountable, every American citizen should be conversant in the Constitution. But because most citizens just think, well, if a judge said it, then it must be law.
Yeah.
Because most citizens think that we have, and like most citizens are not aware that these Article III courts are governed by Congress. The congressional members are able to say, well, you know, the courts have said it. without the citizens being able to say, yeah, but you control the courts.
Yeah, that's the saddest thing we've said, I think, here in this segment, is that the level of ignorance on the part of the American people, because they should be as outraged as we are. Yes. They should be going, what is this federal judge in Hawaii doing ruling for the entire nation, or this federal judge, you know, not this is on the travel ban, this is here on what the president can do in the military regarding transgenders. Mm-hmm. What is this district judge doing ruling for the entire nation? Are the people, we the people, should be going, they can't do that.
And that should be a nonpartisan or bipartisan appeal, because what happens when the judges are ruling against you if you happen to be a progressive and now you have a judge who is, you know, a conservative? Mm-hmm. That kind of is an oxymoron. You probably won't have conservatives issuing nationwide injunctions. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you have a conservative judge who starts to issue nationwide injunctions that say, oh, all Planned Parenthood facilities have to shut down today.
Yeah.
You know, then they would want.
Well, there would be protests.
Well, I think it's because secular progressives know that constitutionalists, judges who follow, won't do it.
Yeah.
So the only ones doing it are these leftist radicals. And that's when your dad is always saying, Tim's always saying, we have to fight with one hand tied behind our backs because we follow the rule of law.
Yep, that's right.
I think it's time for the president to have a fireside chat and bring in Abe Hamilton III.
There you go.
Jay Sekulow. This is what the Constitution says.
Right.
This is what the three branches are all about, folks. And we're off the rails here.
And the problem with Congress here is they like, this is my personal opinion, they like judges ruling nationwide on all these controversial issues because it means they don't have to deal with it. Because if Congress had to deal with it, they would actually have to stay in Washington and work 40-hour weeks like everybody else does, and they would have to get things done. But they don't.
And they would have to vote, and then their vote is recorded. Public record.
Yeah. Yes. And so instead they go, well, it looks like the judges took care of it. You know, the Supreme Court said it. It's the law of the land. We just need to live by it.
Yep.
And to your point, Walker, if you look at the quantity or lack thereof of legislation that's passed by Congress, it's paltry. In terms of actual substantive measures that pass, it's like 40 bills that end up passing. We literally are being governed by a combination of the administrative state portion of the swamp and the judiciary. Hmm. Congress is basically AWOL in governing our nation, which is the branch that is supposed to be the most engaged in issues of domestic import.
Swamp is too nice a word. I've come to that conclusion.
Well, sewer.
When
Donald Trump was candidate Trump and he was saying going to drain the swamp, I was all for it. And in a nonpartisan way, we had a bloated bureaucracy. It was governing the country, to your point, in ways that are extra constitutional, just beyond the intent of the founders. But then when he got into office, I thought, this swamp, that's not strong enough to the power, because both political parties are in it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, to your point, I'm not sure that swamp is a apt enough symbol.
Well, and to the point too, I mean, Lindsey Graham got together, they want to pass a law that makes it impossible for the president to fire Mueller.
It puts it in the hands of three judges. Mm-hmm. Goes back to giving up the authority.
Yeah. All right. Abraham Hamilton III has been our guest this segment. He's public policy analyst, general counsel for AFA, host of the Hamilton Corner, heard weekdays at 5:05 Central Time on American Family Radio, to which you are listening right now. This is Today's Issues, and we're going to take a five-minute break for news. Abe, thank you so much for being on.
My pleasure.
Kept you here for a little longer, but we had plenty of legal questions to ask. When we come back, Steve Jordahl will be here with some discussion of more news, and then Jeff Myers, president of Summit Ministries, about something that is happening in California. We've discussed it some this week, but it's having real-world consequences for Christian ministries. We'll be talking about that after our five-minute break for news. This is Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.